Morning. Today's daf in Shabbos is Sadi. We are starting today on the Mishnah on Pei Tesamud Beis, and it is towards the bottom of the Amud, and we return back to Hilchos Shabbos, and specifically to the topic of Shiurim and Hotza'ah. So just to recalibrate where we are in the Masechta, we're here at the end of the ninth parak of the Masechta, and the majority of the ninth parak of the Masechta took us on a detour. The Gemara, the Mishnayos, took us and rerouted us through different areas in Shas, having nothing to do with Shabbos, but having to do with the theme that was mentioned at the end of the eighth parak. The eighth parak primarily discussed Shiurim and Hotzah. How much does a person need to take on Shabbos in order to violate the Malacha of Hotzah? The item has to have both a qualitative worth and a quantitative worth. And so the eighth parak went through various items, foods and all other items, and went through the shiurim of all these other items. And at the end of the eighth parak, the Mishnah there mentioned cheres, earthenware, how much has to be taken out. And the Mishnah mentioned that there's a pasuk in Yeshayahu that at least supports this idea in terms of what's a significant amount of cheres. With that stated, the Mishnah then in the ninth parak took us through various halachas throughout Shas, where there's a halacha, a support for that from a pasuk, generally speaking from Navi. And then the Gemara discussed, and for about five blot here in the ninth parak, so we went through Ma'amad Har Sinai, the date of Kabbalah Satorah, and that all stemmed from the Mishnah that talked about Paletah Shechva Zera, as we discussed at length here in this ninth parak. As we are now approaching the end of the ninth parak, and Mirtz Hashem today we're going to be finishing the ninth parak, so we're going to go back to the topic of the Malach of Hotzah, Shiurim, and so we're going to be tying up now all the loose ends in terms of all the items and materials that have not yet been mentioned. And here we are now in the Mishnah. We're going to be mentioning a number of other items and their Shiurim. We start with the Mishnah. How much wood does a person have to take out on Shabbos in order to be chayv on the Malach of Hotza'ah? The amount that would cook an egg. Literally a light egg, but it means, as we discussed already, it's basically a chicken egg, and that's the easiest to cook. So the amount of wood that will fuel such a fire. In terms of spices, the amount of spices that would, again, be able to season a single egg. Now, in terms of spices can combine with one another, meaning so that if, let's say, this egg required a certain amount of salt, but I'd be happy with a little less salt, but just as much pepper, just as an example. So those spices now would be mitzarif to get me to the shear in order to be chayiv. The Mishnah goes on to describe other things that one would be chayiv for carrying. Klipe gozim, klipe rimonim, istis pua. So these are all different types of shells and other herbs that grow out of the ground. These are primarily used for dyeing. And so kedeli sva behen beged katam bar svacha. I'm sorry, pi svacha. And the amount that you have to carry these types of fruit shells and other type of dyeing materials is the amount that it would take to dye a small piece of garment that the woman wore on the top of her head. The svacha we already discussed extensively back earlier in the Masechta, when describing what a woman can wear on Shabbos and what a woman cannot wear on Shabbos. And the svacha is the hat that she has on the top of her head. So the amount of dye that would be necessary to dye this fabric on the woman's head. Meiraglaim neser abaris kamulya ashleg kedei lechabes begakatan pisvacha. And then the Mishnah goes through a number of cleansing agents. What the definition of these agents, some of them we know, some of them we kind of know. Meiraglaim is urine, neser is natron, but after that, there are different types of cleansing agents. The list should sound a little bit familiar. We saw this list back in Masechta Nida, because as we learned together regarding the removal of blood out of a garment, so we talked about the process of using seven cleansing agents. And if you remember, the Mishnah is over there in Nida, the Gemara there, so they had to have been applied in a certain order. And so over here, these agents that are mentioned over here are actually of the seven cleansing agents that we discussed back in Masechta Nida. If you count out the number of agents that we've described over here, so there are five in total. The Mishnah Nida goes over seven. So a discussion to be had in terms of why it is that our Mishnah only goes through 5 of the 7 cleansing agents, but anyway, how much of them do you need? And that is to launder the small article of clothing, the small cap that's worn on the head of a woman. And Rabbi Yehuda Amar Kedei Lahavir as a kesem, Rabbi Yehuda says you only need enough of it in order to remove the actual kesem, that is the stain of discharge that comes out of the woman. Okay, so the Mishnah here took us through a number of other items and the amount that one would be chayav for carrying these other items. Start with the Gemara Tanina Chadazimna. Now the Gemara says, now, I think we already went over one of these items before, and that is, in our Mishnah, we opened up with wood and how much wood one has to carry in order to be chayav. And meanwhile, earlier, we discussed in the 8th parak, a reed, which presumably is the same thing. So, Kanakadela ala Azos Kilmos. Now, if the reed is, it could be used as a quill, so then the amount of reed that one would be chayav is that of a quill. However, Imhaya Ava Merusas, however, if it was thick or cracked, Kedei Lavashu Beitzim Kalashu Bebeitzim. So the amount of reed that would take to cook an egg, Trufa Nusuna Be'ufas, the Mishnah earlier happened to have been a little bit more specific. The egg had to be scrambled, it had to be put into a pan. Anyway, but the point is that when we're discussing the reed, we said the amount of reed that would fuel a fire to cook an egg. And we're saying the same thing regarding a piece of wood as well. And what's the chiddush of our Mishnah? That's basically the Gemara's question. So the Gemara says, okay, but I could have said, as far as the reed is concerned, what else are you going to be able to do with a reed? If the reed is not eligible to be used as a quill, you really can't use the reed for anything else. And therefore, the only thing that it will serve as utility is only as fuel for a fire. But when you're talking about wood, you could take the wood and use it as teeth for the key. And so there is a utility function for wood, and it doesn't just simply have to be fuel for the fire. So afilu kol shehu, and therefore, teeth of a key that's really small. And therefore, the amount that one would be chai for carrying would be a kol shehu, really small amount. So kamash lan. So therefore, the Mishnah has to tell us that when it comes to wood, so the most common, serviceable, minimum utility of wood is going to be that for the fueling of the fire. Tavlin kedela tavla beitzakala. We're back to the spices of the Mishnah. Urminu, the Gemara is going to be bothered now because of a Mishnah. A Mishnah teaches us tavlin shnayim u'shlosha shemos mimin echad, that if I have tavlin and it is basically the same type. Rashi over here gives a description when we say same type of spices, right? Rashi says pipalavim v'shachor v'arach. Let's say it's black pepper as opposed to white pepper, other way around. White pepper as opposed to black pepper, long peppers. Or Rashi says afilu giminim v'heim shel isur. So basically have different types of peppers that are mixed together. Asur u'mitstarfim zeim zeh. So they're going to be prohibited, and they're going to be mitzvah, and they're going to combine one with another. Now, in terms of the Yisr over here, So as far as the Yisr is concerned over here, so we are talking about the Yisr of Arla, and how much of it do I need? So you need a requisite amount, but the requisite amount could be a tsirif, can be a combination. Of different types of spices, meaning black pepper, white pepper, Amar Chizkia. Now, on this Mishnah in Arla, Chizkia had the following comment, which is, as we turn now to the top of Tzadim and Aleph, B'minim is Sika Shana. We're only going to say that they're going to combine if they are complementing one another. If the flavors of the spices complement one another, then and only then are they going to combine. And our Mishnah gives you the indication that as far as spices combining are concerned, there doesn't have to be any issue of the spices complementing one another. So time, and the Gemara makes exactly this point. Time the chazal amatek ekadera. The only reason why they combine in that Mishnah Arla is because they are there to accomplish the same thing. Literally sweeten the pot, but over here, it just simply means add flavor and the spices complement one another. Halav hachilo, but if they don't complement one another, it doesn't work. So hachinami chazal lamasek. And so the Gemara says, okay, but we'll say the same thing over here. Meaning that our Mishnah, when talking about the tzirif of spices, is also working with the same assumption that these spices have to complement one another. And so the Mishnah in Arla and the Mishnah here in Shabbos are not in conflict with one another. Continuing in the Gemara, Klipe Egozim, the Klipe Rimonim, Satis Pua Kedelitzboa Begekatan. So this discussion that we're about to see, we saw already earlier in the Masechta, but it's good chazar, it's good review. The Gemara is bothered by the fact that we talk about the amount of dye that needs to take out. It's enough dye in order to dye the small hat of the woman. Or in the Gemara says, okay, but Amotzi Simanim Shurim Kedelitzboa Behem Dugma Lira. But if one carries out dye, how much dye does one need to carry out in order to be chayev? Just to make a swatch, so that when the seller is selling the dye, he could show somebody what it's going to look like on the fabric. And so basically all it is the smallest amount. It's just a swatch of fabric that was dyed with that dye. And so when taking out the materials for the dye, so that you have to have a significant amount that you are able to dye an entire garment. But meanwhile, when you're taking out the actual dye itself that was already made, so then it is going to be it could be just a smallest amount. And that's a discrepancy, and the Gemara is bothered by that discrepancy. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Abba Ravua, Lefi Shein Adam Terech L'Shor Samaman, L'Mitzvah Behem, Dukma L'Ira. So the Gemara's answer, as we already saw earlier in the previous parak, but we get to review, is that look, when you're talking about dye that was already made, and so now it's just a question of taking the dye and dyeing an item, so there, since you already have the dye, so it's the smallest amount. Even a swatch worth of dye would be chayev. Masha'enkin over here, when we're talking about the materials, so the materials mean that you have to take this material, then you have to make dye, and that's a process. And no one's going to go through that process unless you have a significant amount. And that's the difference between having the actual already made dye as opposed to just having the materials and you have yet to make the dye. Meiraglayim, and here we now we're going to go through what we saw back in Masechta Nida in terms of fine-tuning exactly what these cleansing agents are. So we're talking about urine tana meiraglayim ad ben arvam yom. The meiraglayim has to come out from somebody who's 40 days old. Now, it's not perfectly clear in the Gemara. Does that mean that it has to come out from the person who is before age 40, meaning an infant, before 40 days old? Does it have to be coming from somebody who's above 40 days old? It's not perfectly clear. It just simply says the word ad. Okay. Neser, we're talking about natron. Tana neser alaxandris vol neser an pantarin. So the Gemara describes not only the neser, but where it comes from. Specifically from Alexandria and not an pantris. Baris amar Rav Yehuda zechol. Now, when as far as Baris is concerned, the Gemara right now identifies Baris as sand. Now, the Braisa taught us that Boris and Chol, which means then, of course, that it can't be that Boris is Chol if in this Braisa we are putting the two side by side. Elamai Boris Kavriasa. So Boris is some form of sulfur. Make sure the Gemara is bothered by that as well. Because they said in the Mishnah in Shviyas, Hosifu Aleim, Hachalbitzim Ha'alinim V'Haboris V'A'ahal. So these are things that were added to the Isser of Shvius. V'isakadacha kavrasa. Now, if you're telling me that sulfur, kavrasa v'isa b'shvius. Now, sulfur is a mineral, and it's not going to be subject to the Shemitah law. V'hatayu, the Gemara quotes, a b'raisa z'aklal kol sheish lo ikar yesh lo shvius. If something has a root, it's subject to shvius. If v'shein lo ikar, ain lo shvius. And if it does not have a root, it's not subject to shvius. Meaning that the only things that can be subject to shvius is that it has to be plant, and it can't be mineral. And if we're saying that the definition of Boris is sulfur, sulfur is mineral. And there's no way that it could be subject to the Shemitah law. Ella, my Boris Allah. So the Gemara says Boris is I guess, what you and I would call aloe. V'atanya v'aboris v'aloe. The Gemara says, yeah, but the Braisa puts Boris and aloe side by side. And so therefore Boris can't be aloe. So the Gemara's response is tregavne aloe. No, there are two different types of aloes. One is called aloe generically. And there's a subtype or a different type, which is called Boris. In terms of another cleansing agent, Kamulya. So I'm Rav Yehuda, Shluf Dutz. That was helpful. But not to me. Ashleg, the Gemara now identifies the cleansing agent of Ashleg. I'm Shmuel, Shetil Lechon Nechuseyama. So Shmuel says, look, I had to do research over here. And I asked the people who travel back and forth from the islands. Of Amruli Shununa Shmei. Now they called the Shununa. Umishtakach Menufa de Marganisa. You're going to find it amongst the pearls. Umafkale Beramsa de Parzala. And the way that you remove it is using some sort of iron tool in order to get it out of the from where the pearls are located. Okay, and that's where you're going to find this cleansing agent. Okay, so various minerals from around the world in order to get you to your cleansing agents. Again, that goes back to the Mishnah in terms of the carrying of these cleansing agents. Mishnah went through five of them, and the Gemara just went through a little bit more detail in terms of what they are. We are now in the Mishnah on the middle of Tzani Amid Aleph, and more items to discuss. Papelos Kol Shehu, in terms of taking out a pepper, so the amount is going to be a Kol Shehu. Okay, I'm sorry. Papelos Kol Shehu, V'Itran Kol Shehu. Now, in terms of Itran, some form of tar, so the it's any amount, when it comes to spices and metals, it's going to be any amount. Taking any of the stones of the Mizbeach or the dirt of the Mizbeach, so mit taking out something that was decayed, and when I say something, I mean a sefer that was decayed, or rotted, or let's say the wraps of the sefer, which is also rotted, kol shehu, the shear is going to be any amount. Shematznian oso legonzan. Now the Mishnah goes on to explain. Now why? Why over here if I have decayed sfarim, so the shear is a kol shehu? Because even though in terms of utility, so it doesn't really serve us, we're not going to do anything with it, but at the same time, however, any amount is going to be a significant amount by virtue of the fact that we're going to have to put it into Geniza. When you have something which is Tashmishe Kedusha, something that is intrinsically holy, Sfarim have Tashmishe Kedusha, that Sfarim, that Psukim, that anything from Torah, Nevi, Meksuvim, which are Tashmishe Kedusha, have either Psukim or Shem Hashem, so they need to be put in Geniza. So even though this decayed sefer has no utility per se, but because it needs to be put into Geniza regardless of how much it is, therefore it is going to be the shear is going to be a kol shehu. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Af Hamotzi Misham She'avod Azar Kol Shehu. Rabbi Yehuda takes a position which, on one hand, is interesting; on the other hand, is defensible. In fact, he's going to defend it, which is that if I take out Tashmish She'avod Azar, anything that served Avod Azar, accessorized Avod Azar, one would be chayv. Shenamah the pasuk says, "V'lo yidbak biyadcha meuma minacheres." I'm sorry, minacherem. So taking out any Avodah Zarah is going to be asur by virtue of the fact that we know the halach is that you have to destroy any amount of Avodah Zarah. And so it all becomes significant. It, admittedly, in a negative manner in which you need to destroy it, but by virtue of the fact that it's significant in this regard that you need to destroy it, so therefore the shear for carrying it is going to be a kol shehu. The Gemara immediately jumps in to describe and help us to find these things a little bit better. Papel's kol shehu, in terms of the pepper, one would be liable for any amount. Why would that be la baichazia? What good is it? And l'rei chapez, the Gemara says, because you put the pepper in your mouth and it's good, and it helps remedy bad breath. It certainly gives us the idea that the pepper over here mentioned is not, doesn't sound like the pepper that we would describe it as. Okay, but regardless, Rashi points out in the first Rashi in the Mishnah, right? Ain't no pilpel shalanu. It's not our pepper. So whatever the Mishnah and the Gemara over here is describing, it's not what we would normally describe as a pepper. Ichron kol shehu, in terms of taking out tar, any amount of maichazia litzlichasa. So it's good for a migraine headache. The mine besamim kol shehin, as far as besamim is concerned, any amount on rabbanan amotzi reich ra kol shehu. Anything that you take out that has a bad odor, it's a kol shehu. Shemen tov kol shehu. If it is an oil with a good odor, right, a good aroma, so then it's a kol shehu. Argaman kol shehu, if it's purple dye, it's any amount. U visulas havered achas. And taking a petal, the petal of a rose, even one. Mini matachos kol shehin. Now, as far as metal is concerned, any amount of maichaze, what good is any amount of metal? Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, shikim rad lo sos mimenu, darban katan. Because what you could do is that you can make it into a darban, a goad, to help the animals, to help shepherd the animals. Tana Rabban, the Gemara quotes the Braisa, HaOmer, Hare Alai Barzel. A person commits himself to bringing Barzel to the Beis HaMikdash. How much does he have to give? We discuss this in Erchin in detail in terms of what is the minimum amount that a person commits himself to when he donates a certain material. So Achim Omrim. So according to the position of Achim, Lo Yivchos Me Ama Al Ama. It's got to be the amount of iron that is one ama by one ama. Lamai Chazi Amar Rav Yosef L'Kalya Orev. We discussed this back in Masechta Tamid. And the Mishnayos in Midos. Kalya Orev on the top of the Beis HaMikdash. So there was, now we could describe it as a scarecrow, but others suggest that it's not an actual scarecrow that was put on the top of the Beis HaMikdash, which in of itself is an unusual image, but it just simply means that there were iron rods that were placed on the top of the Beis HaMikdash so that no birds, no ravens can land on the top of the Beis HaMikdash. Differences, fundamental differences between the first Beis HaMikdash, second Beis HaMikdash. So first Beis HaMikdash where there was more intense Shekhinah, so there was not of this problem. However, in the second Beis HaMikdash, which had less Shekhinah, and there wasn't as much Nisim in the second Beis HaMikdash, so you had this problem, and so therefore they had to put these spikes on the top of the Beis HaMikdash. Igadami now, another version, Achem Omen Lo Yivchos Mikaya Orev. In the second version, it's going to be the same information just presented in the reverse, where if a person commits himself to bringing iron to the Beis HaMikdash, so it has to be enough for the Kalya Orev. And V'kama, I'm Rav Yosef Amma Al Amma. And now the Rav Yosef just explains that it's one Amma by one Amma. Nechoshet Lo Yichos Mi Ma'a Kesef. If a person commits himself to bringing copper to the Beis HaMikdash, so it has to be a minimum of one Ma'a. That is a coin with a very defined weight. Tanya, we learned in the Brice of Rabbi Lazar Omer, Lo Yivchos Mitzinor Ketan Shal Nechoshes. One should not give less than a small copper fork. L'maychazi Amar Abaye, Shemechatetim Basa Psilas Mekanchan Aneris. So it's very good in terms of fixing the menorah, the taking off the wicks, cleaning out the lamp. Mekek Svarim Mekek Mitzbechos. Now we're talking about the decayed Svarim. Amar Yehuda Mekek Disafirim. Techach Dishirai. Now, the Mekik is not only a way of describing a decay, but the Mekik is also a way of describing the worm. The assumption is that the decay is being caused by worms, some sort of infestation. So the Mekik of Sfarim, meaning the worms of the Sfarim, and Techach Dishirai, and the worms of silk, a silkworm, V'ile de Inve, and the worms that are found in grapes, Uped te'ena, and there's a type of worm that's found in figs. It's called a peh. V'hadrimoni, and the ha of pomegranates, kulu sakanta. So they all would be dangerous if they would be swallowed. There was a student in front of Rav Yochanan. He was eating figs. Amalei Rebbe kotzing yesh peteinim. And he said to Rav Yochanan, that there are literally thorns in the figs. Amalei, katle peladein, katle peladein. Peh over here, not mouth, but peh meaning one of the worms that we just described. So he said that the peh actually killed, this peh worm actually killed him. And so as a result of that, that's why he... That's why he was he described it as, he was describing it as thorns. I kind of takes us to the end of the Mishnah, and we are at the bottom of the Amud, and we have one more Mishnah and one more sugya to go. Hamotzi kupa haroklin. One takes out the kupas roklin. Kupas roklin. The peddler would be going around with spices, and there would be various selections that would be in his box. And so we're describing over here the box that's being taken out. Alpha Bishish Baminim Harbe, and let's say there are various samples of different spices in the box. Even though there are many, you only have one chatas, because the box creates it as one unit and one entity. Zironi Gina, if a person takes out seeds of the garden, Pachos Mecha Grogeris, even if he took out less than a Grogeris, you would be Chai Rav Yehuda Ben Beser Omer Chamisha. According to Rav Yehuda, he would be chayv even if he took out only but five seeds. We're on the top of the Amud Bey, Zerah Kishuin, taking out the seed of a cucumber. Shnaim, if he took out two seeds, Zerah Diluin, Gourd, Shnaim, two. Zerah Pula Mitzri, Egyptian bean, Shnaim, that would be two. Chagav Chai Tahor, if one were to carry out a locust, and it's alive, and it's kosher. So Kol Shehu, so there the size is going to be insignificant, being the fact that it takes out an entire entity. And as we'll see in a moment in the Gemara, what use is it if it is in fact alive? If it's dead, that's great, then it can eat it. But what good is it if it's alive, and what's the chashivas of the item? So we're going to see that in the Gemara. Mace, now if the locust is dead, kegrogris. So then the amount is going to be a grogris, and as we already explained extensively. But we don't think in these terms because it's not part of our diet. When the grasshopper is dead, so now that is called dinner. We're assuming that we're talking about a kosher grasshopper. Over the years, as we all know, we have lost our ability to identify kosher grasshoppers, but back in the day, so it was part, just simply part and parcel of the diet, as long as it was of a kosher species. So once it is dead, and parenthetically, I'm sure we can all guess this, but it happens to be halachically so, grasshoppers do not require a shechita. Much like fish don't require shechita, grasshoppers also do not require a shechita. So all you need to do is just simply kill it and eat it. Sounds disgusting, but just like a fish. So the shear is going to be a grogris. Why? Because it's food. And as we already discussed extensively back in the 8th parak, anything which is a food, the shear is going to be a grogris, and a dead grasshopper is food. Therefore, the shear is a grogris. Sipor's kramim, bein chaya ben mesa. If one were to take out a sipor's kramim. Now, sipora is usually we describe as a bird, but over here, it seems to be that we're describing, once again, another type of grasshopper. And whether it's alive or whether it's dead, this year is going to be a kol shehu. Shemastina sola refuah, because that happens to be that it was used for medicinal purposes. Rav Yehuda omer afa mosi chagav chai tamei. Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that if somebody were to take out a non-kosher locust, so kol shehu, the shear is going to be any amount. Because even though it's not kosher, you're not going to eat it, but still, what do you do with it? You give it to your child to play, and it will give your child hours of entertainment. We go back to the Mishnah. In the beginning of the Mishnah, we're talking about various seeds that are taken out. Uriminu, the Gemara says, Zeva v'choladak, kedei lezava kelach shel kruv divrei Rabbi Kiva v'chachamam omrim, kedei lezava krisha. This discussion that we're having now in the Gemara is something that we had back in the 8th parak. It's good chazara. And that is the discrepancy between our Mishnah and a Mishnah that we learned earlier. 10 blad ago. Daf Pei. So the Mishnah over there says that when taking out fertilizer, or sand, right, fine sand. So it is the amount fertilizing just simply one stalk, according to Rabbi Kiva, according to the Chachamim, just a single leek. Anyway, but what comes out then is that it seems like it's a lot less than what we're describing right now. So Amar Papa Hadazria, Hadalazria. So the Gemara says the difference is whether it's planted or whether it's not planted. Lefisha'in Adam Torech Lahotzi Nima Achas Lazria. If we're talking about actually taking seeds and planting the seeds, it's not going to be worth anyone's trouble to take out one seed and plant one seed. It has to be a significant amount of seeds. But once the seeds are already planted in the ground, and now it's a question of fertilizing, so then it is going to be worth your while to fertilize just even one plant. Zeri Kishuin. The seeds of a cucumber. Tan Rabbanan Amosi Gari'inim. If one were to take out pits, Im L'Natia, if he's interested in planting them, Shtayim, the shear is two. Im La'Achila, if he wants to eat him, Kemlo Pi Chazir. The amount that would fit into the mouth of a pig, apparently that was the diet of the pig. V'Kama Melo Pi Chazir. How much is that? So then it would just simply be one pit. Im L'Hasik. If the pits were taken out for fuel for the fire, dried date pits were used back in the day as fuel. So kedei levashel beitz akala. So we already know this, but we get to review. It's the amount that it would take to fuel a single egg. Im lecheshbon. If the purpose of them is just to keep count. So, right, you're going to put them on your little abacus. So, shtayim, so then the amount is going to be two. Acherim omrim chamesh. And some are of the opinion that it's going to be five. Tanur Rabban, the Gemara quotes a braisa. Hamotzi shnei nimim miznav asufa miznav hapara. If one were to take two hairs from the tail of a horse or the tail of a cow, chayev, shematznin oso lenishbin. Because they're going to be good for the nishbin. Rashi describes them as being traps. You take out the hair of a pig, right? They have very short, stubby hair. So achas, one would be chai for taking out one. Tsuri deko, taking out the fronds of a palm tree. Shtaim, this year is going to be two. Tsuri deko, if one were to take out the vines, achas, it's going to be one. The Gemara over here doesn't give us exactly what the significance of these items are. Rashi over here, when it comes to the stubble of the pig, the stubble of the hair of a pig, Rashi just simply describes, no, I'm sorry, Rashi says, Rashi says that's good for stitching. It's good for some form of stitching. And in terms of the fronds are concerned, so you can make baskets out of it. Okay, in other words, again, it's the same idea that as long as this base amount has some sort of utility, so then one would be chayev. We are finishing up over here. Tziporos kramim bein chayev bein mesa kol shehu. If one were to take out the tziporos kramim, again, it's a type of grasshopper. My tziporos kramim, amarav, palya bi'ira. Again, that's good if you spoke Aramaic fluently. For the rest of us, it's just an Aramaic definition of what the mission describes. Amar Abayi Mishakach B'dikla Dechad Nav'aram. You can find this. You can find this type of insect in a palm tree. Av Abdile Le Chukma. And it is used in order to get sharper. Achal Le Pagdi Yemine. And the Gemara over here gives us the prescription of how exactly one is supposed to ingest it in order to sharpen the mind. Achlel pag d'yamine. Needless to say, it must be that this type of insect is a kosher type. Otherwise, even though it has beneficial effects, but one would not be allowed to ingest it, unless of course it's a sakana. Otherwise, let's assume that we are describing over here a kosher insect. So achal al pag de mine, so you eat its right side of pag de smalle ramle be gufta nachasha, and the left half of it you put into a copper tube, vechasamle be shisim gushbanke. And we've heard this kinds of prescriptions before, and make sure to seal it really well. It says 60 seals on it, but 60 just simply means seal it good. Vitale be ivid de smalle, and hang it on your left arm, vesimancha, and just as an amount to help you remember that. Leiv chacham li mino, velev ksil le smalle. The chachma comes from the right side, and the foolishness comes from the left side. The chakim kama debai. At that point in time, it is some sort of memory aid. You can remember as much as you want to. The gamar kama debai. You can learn as much as you want to. The achalei leidich palge. Then to eat the other half, the ilo me akar tamudo, because otherwise it's just simply ineffective. Okay. I appreciate if anyone seeks from me further understanding and clarification of this wonderful method of memory aid and learning supplement. But as far as my understanding, we have just maxed out in terms of how this works. And needless to say, don't try this at home. Rav Yehuda Omer Af Hamotzi. Rav Yehuda adds in the Mishnah that if one to take out a non-kosher grasshopper, v'tana kamas avalo, so my time adoma achalei. Now, as far as the Tana Kama is concerned, so the Tanakhama is of the opinion that don't give a child a non-kosher grasshopper because he may come and he may eat it. Rashi over here points out, Duma Achel, V'afil aman damar katan ochel neveyasein beisim mesuvin lahafrisho. So Rashi is bothered by the following. So let's paint our picture over here. You're going to be giving the child a kosher grasshopper. That's fine. He'll play with it. And if it dies, he'll eat it. And that would be fine as well. But if you give the child a non-kosher grasshopper, so he may come and he may eat it. Now, Rashi over here notes that there is a general debate throughout Shas in terms of if you see a minor who is engaged in an iser, is there an obligation? The parent has a mitzvah of chinuch, but we're talking about the Jewish community at large. Is there an obligation where someone has to step in and remove the iser away from him? He's a katan, he's not chayv yet in mitzvos, and yes, the parents have a mitzvah of chinuch, but do we, the Jewish people as a community, have an obligation to separate him from iser? And this is a major debate throughout Shas. And Rashi over here says, even if we're going to take the position that there is no obligation for Beis Din to remove the Isser from him, Rashi continues, Modehu delo yavinu lebiadayim. But that's true, but that's only if you find the child with the Isser. But even that position is going to maintain that you can't give the child the Isser. And so over here, one would be forbidden to give the child the Isser. Rashi says that's how even that position would understand our Gemara. So the Gemara says, okay, good. So the ihachi tarnami. So the Gemara says, well, even if I give the child a kosher grasshopper, but if it's alive, aren't we concerned that the child is going to eat it? Now, eating the kosher grasshopper after it died, that would be fine. But eating it while it's alive, so that would be an iser. Rashi points to the Gemara in Makos. Eating a live creature, even if it's kosher, is a violation of the Isser Bal Teshaksu. That's simply disgusting behavior. The Gemara tells us that Rav Kahana was in front of Rav, and he was taking a type of kosher grasshopper, putting it on his mouth. Amarle Shakle. And Rav's instructions to Rav Kahana is take it away from Because even though you're not eating it, but it certainly looks like you're eating it, and that is an issue of Maris Ayin, and you're giving off the appearance that you're eating a live grasshopper, which would be, if you ate it, a violation of Bal Teshaksu. So the Gemara is bothered by the fact that we're not allowed to give, according to the Chachamim, according to the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, we are not allowed to give a child a non-kosher grasshopper because he may come and eat it. The Gemara says, okay, but if I give him a live kosher grasshopper, aren't we concerned that he's going to eat it alive? And that would be a violation about Teshaksu. So Eladilma Mais Vachalei. So the Gemara says that no, as far as the non-kosher grasshopper is concerned, the reason why you're not going to give it to the child is not because the child would eat it while it is alive. The child would play with it while it's alive, and after it dies, then the child would eat it. So in other words, now we understand the difference between kosher versus non-kosher. In the case of non-kosher, so then the child would end up eating non-kosher grasshopper. In the case of kosher, well, if the grasshopper died and the child ate it, that would be fine. Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, and now Rabbi Yehuda Shita. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion. Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned about this. Rabbi Yehuda Imayis Katan Misbeit Sapitle. The parak ends off adorably over here that within the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, if let's say the locust were to die, so the child would not eat it, but the child would have a eulogy over the locust. It was basically a pet to the child, and so therefore not thinking about eating it, but having some sort of emotional attachment to it, so the child would simply bury it and not eat it, and that's why Rabbi Yehuda did not have this kind of concern. Hajan Lachama Rabbi Akiva, that is the end of the ninth parak of the Masechta. Tomorrow morning, Yirtzeh Hashem, we're going to be beginning the 10th parak of the Masechta. As a quick recap of our daf today, so we basically covered three Mishnayos and three different sugyas. The first Mishnah talked about wood, cleansing agents, where one would be chayef if he took them out, and we went over the shirim of those items. The Mishnah in the middle of Sadi Amun Aleph talked about other minerals that one would carry out, vegetables and minerals. And we went through the items, including decayed sfarim, tar, stones, things that are significant even in the most minute amount. We went through the items, then we went through why they are, in fact, significant. And finally, the last mission that we did today started on the bottom of Sadi Amud Aleph, talked about taking out Kupas Rochlin, a box that had various samples in it, but because it was all within one box, you're only going to be chayv one malacha, one iser for carrying it out. If it's done b'shogi, you're only chayv one carbon chatas. And then we talked about seeds and fertilizing, and we talked about the transportation of grasshoppers, both kosher and non-kosher, both alive and dead. Adkan.